I actually thought that I was going to not so much get out of speaking this year. This is actually the first year that I came prepared with a message. Usually I get here, and last year I just had a thought that through a lot of you guys have heard the pineapple series stories with Otto Koning, he gave a message on, it seems like all through the CDs were speaking on surrender. And not as a nation, but well, as a nation too, actually, but surrender to God. All things are, you surrender to Him. So that's what led to my message last year. But when I got here, all I had was that word. I didn't have any verses, nothing. And so I sat in my cabin and prepared a somewhat short sermon. But this year I did actually have something that I wanted to speak about, and I thought the reason why I was going to give it was a situation that our family's in that I felt was in that was in need. Well, that has been taken care of. So I thought, well, then I heard that I wasn't even on the schedule this year, so I thought, right, wasn't going to have to, so. But anyway, so I was kind of explaining to everybody some of our story from when we went to Arkansas, how it ended up down there and then back in Montana. And I was giving away a lot of my sermon and my stories that I was telling, and Brenda kept telling me, you better quit telling everybody your story, you won't have anything to say in your sermon. So I kind of cut it off. Well, then when I thought I wasn't going to give it, I started telling my story. And so I told Carol, I said, I guess you're going to have to hear it twice, because I just got through telling her at lunch, because she'd been wanting to hear it. I said, well, I can't give it away because it's going to be in my sermon. But then I thought I wasn't going to give it, so I gave it away, and now I'm giving it anyway. So anyway, this is a question I posed, because this question was has come up in my mind quite a bit in recent time. And have you ever been or felt like or actually heard from God something specifically that He wanted you to do, and at the time you thought, sure, I can do that, but then after time went by, you realized you didn't do what you heard God tell you to do? And that's what led me to this. I'm not a learned scholar. I don't remember a lot of things. I can't tell you where things are in here. I can tell you what it says, but I can't tell you where they are unless I look them up. So when I give a talk, it usually involves a lot of life story, and unfortunately, God's put me through a lot of things, so I have a lot of stories to tell. Most people that know us call us the gypsy family, because we travel so much, and we've been here, we've been there, and we thought we were moving to Arkansas, and then God sent us back to Montana. So in that, we've had a lot of life experiences that seem to work out pretty well when it comes time to give a sermon or whatever. So, but I want to start out with reading 1 Kings chapter 2. Yeah, 1 Kings 2. It's a story that deals with King David and the end of King David's life when Solomon was going to be taking over the headship to become king. I'll just read it when I get to the end. I know a lot of you already read this. But so now the days of David drew near that he should die, and he charged Solomon his son, saying, I go the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, and prove yourself as a man, and keep the charge of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his judgments, and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn. That the Lord may fulfill his word which he spoke concerning me, saying, if your sons take heed to their way, and to walk before me in truth, with all their heart and with all their soul, he said, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. Moreover, you know also that Joab, the son of Zeruiah, those words, did to me, and what he did to the two commanders of the armies of Israel, to Abner the son of Ner, and Amasa the son of Jether, whom he killed. And he shed the blood of war in peacetime, and put the blood of war on his belt that was around his waist, and on his sandals that were on his feet. Therefore, do according to your wisdom, and do not let his gray hair go down to the grave in peace. But show kindness to the sons of Barzillai, the Gileadite, and let them be among those who eat at your table, for so they have came to me when I fled from Absalom, your brother. And see, have with you Shimei, the son of Gera, the Benjamite, from Behurim, who cursed me with malicious curse in the day that I went to Mahanaim. But he came down to meet me at the Jordan, and I swore to him by the Lord, saying, I will not put you to death with the sword. Now, therefore, do not hold him guiltless, for you are a wise man, and know what you ought to do to him, but bring his gray hair down to the grave with blood. So David rested with his fathers and was buried in the city of David. The period that David reigned over Israel was 40 years. 7 years he reigned in Hebron, and in Jerusalem he reigned 33 years. When Solomon sat on the throne of his father David, and his kingdom was firmly established. Now Adonijah, the son of Haggith, came to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon. So she said, do you come peaceably? And he said, peaceably. Moreover, he said, I have something to say to you. And she said, say it. They said, you know that the kingdom was mine, and all Israel had set their expectations on me that I should reign. However, the kingdom has been turned over and has become my brother's, for it was his from the Lord. Now I ask one petition of you, do not deny me. And she said, say it. Then he said, please speak to King Solomon, for he will not refuse you, that he may give me Abishag the Shunammite as wife. So Bathsheba said, very well, I will speak for you to the king. Bathsheba therefore went to King Solomon to speak to him for Adonijah, and the king rose up to meet her and bowed down to her and sat down on his throne and had a throne set for the king's mother, so she sat on his right hand. And she said, I desire one small petition of you, do not refuse me. And the king said to her, ask it to my mother, for I will not refuse you. So she said, let Abishag the Shunammite be given to Adonijah your brother's wife. And King Solomon answered and said to his mother, now why do you ask Abishag the Shunammite for Adonijah? Ask for him the kingdom also, for he is my older brother, for him and for Abiathar the priest and for Joab the son of Zeruiah. Then King Solomon swore by the Lord, saying, may God do so to me and more so if Adonijah has not spoken this word against his own life. Now therefore, as the Lord lives, who has confirmed me and set me on the throne of David my father, and who has established a house for me as he promised, Adonijah shall be put to death today. It's going to be a longer time. So King Solomon sent by the hand of Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he struck him down and he died. And to Abiathar the priest, the king said, go to Anathoth, to your own fields, for you are deserving of death, but I will not put you to death at this time, because you carried the ark of the Lord God before my father David, and because you were afflicted every time my father was afflicted. So Solomon removed Abiathar from being priest to the Lord, that he might fulfill the word of the Lord, which he spoke concerning the house of Eli at Shiloh. Then news came to Joab, for Joab had defected to Adonijah, though he had not defected to Absalom. So Joab fled to the tabernacle of the Lord and took hold of the horns of the altar. And King Solomon was told Joab had fled to the tabernacle of the Lord. There he is by the altar. And Solomon sent Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, saying, go strike him down. So Benaiah went to the tabernacle of the Lord and said to him, thus says the king, come out. And he said, no, but I will die here. And Benaiah brought back word to the king, saying, thus said Joab, and thus he answered me. Then the king said to him, do as he has said, and strike him down and bury him. I'm going to skip down to 36. It's getting longer than I remember it being. So then the king sent and called for Shimei and said to him, build yourself a house in Jerusalem and dwell there, and do not go out from there anymore. For it shall be on the day that you go out and cross the brook Kidron, know for certain that you shall surely die. Your blood will be upon your head. And Shimei said to the king, the saying is good, as my lord the king has said, so your servant will do. So Shimei dwelt in Jerusalem many days. Now it happened at the end of 3 years that two slaves of Shimei ran away to Achish, the son of Maacha, the king of Gath. And they told Shimei, saying, look, your slaves are in Gath. So Shimei rose, saddled his donkey, and went to Achish at Gath to seek his slaves. And Shimei went and brought his slaves from Gath. And Solomon was told that Shimei had gone from Jerusalem to Gath and had come back. And the king sent and called for Shimei and said to him, did I not make you swear by the Lord and warn you, saying, know for certain that on the day that you go out and travel anywhere, you shall surely die. And you said to me, the word I have heard is good. Why then have you not kept the oath of the Lord and the commandment that I gave you? The king said moreover to Shimei, you know, as your heart acknowledges all the wickedness that you did to my father David, therefore the Lord will return your wickedness on your own head. But King Solomon shall be blessed, and the throne of David shall be established before the Lord forever. So the king commanded Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he went out and struck him down, he died. Thus the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. I know that got a little long, but what I was trying to point out was the fact that Shimei had made a promise to King Solomon that he would not leave his home forever. And when he disobeyed, it's a pretty drastic measure that happened to him, but when he disobeyed just the king, he was struck dead based on his own words, so that his blood was upon his own head. And fortunately that we have an intercessor that helps us in that area. You know, when we mess up, we can go before the throne and basically get down on our knees and beg the king, our savior, to, you know, forgive us, and by his grace he does, which is fortunate for us. Because in our lives we make many mistakes. And one of the stories that I was sharing with Carol that I don't know if I shared with much with anybody else, but most of you know that most of my life I've been a truck driver, and a lot of times my identity was surrounded in that area. That's what I was, that's what I did. So in that, a lot of times I would take credit for how well successful that my business was at the time. And well, I did notice, though, over the years when I look back, I didn't when I was in it, but when I look back upon it, that at the times when I left God out of the equation, things didn't go so well. You know, I didn't do so well, you know, money was tight. But when I would surrender my business back to God, I noticed that things would get better, but it seemed like that part of it always kind of fades out of your memory, you know, when you know, which isn't good. But in that, He kind of called me on the carpet during that when we came down here that one spring, that I was feeling that I was supposed to get rid of the, you know, I felt like God was telling me I was supposed to sell my truck and do something different because I wasn't keeping true to what I believed. And there were times that my work carried over into the Sabbath, and that really bothered me quite a bit, but evidently not enough of the time to do anything about it. And so when we started to come down here that year, I hate to say this, but I made a deal with God, and I advised to never do that. Because he doesn't forget, and he will call you on it. But so I told God, I told God. He was really laughing that day. But I told him, I said, well, Lord, if you help me get to the feast with loads that pay good, I always had to throw in that little extra to pay good, that when I get back home from this trip, I will sell the truck. So God was true to his word. He found his loads going everywhere I needed to go that year, and they all paid very well. And I thank God for that, you know, and I think I even gave praise to him here for that, but, well, needless to say, long story short, got back to Montana, and I still had the truck. Hadn't even put it up for sale yet. I ran it for quite a bit longer, and then we came down to Nashville for the MIA conference, Messianic Israel Alliance conference, and so we're on our way down for that, and since I had not lived up to my end of the bargain with God, then he basically didn't have to live up to his end of it. And that trip, I was telling Carol, I could not have bought a load to get me where I wanted to go when I had to be there. Out of about probably 4,000 miles that I ran that week, at least half of it I ran empty. And anybody that knows anything about trucking knows when you run empty, you don't make any money. So needless to say, I didn't do so well that trip. But I had not confided in my best friend and my wife that I had made this deal with God. So she had no knowledge of it, and she just thought, well, I guess things just aren't working well on this trip. So when we finally got back home, I'd had several calls on the truck, people wanted to buy it, but I kept making excuses as to why I couldn't sell it right now. And so we got back home, and things weren't looking really good. Our money was a little tight, and I wasn't doing well. And I finally broke down and shared with my wife the deal I made, and she said, you did what? I said, yeah, I made a mistake. I made a deal with God, and I backed out. I was lucky I wasn't struck down like the gentleman in the story we just read. But fortunately, he was graceful. He knew I had a family that would find it tough to survive without me. So So anyway, we decided that we'd better, or I decided through my wife's encouragement that I had better hold true on my end of the bargain. So, but I still didn't want to, so I called the guy back that had really expressed an interest in it, and he wanted it, and I still didn't want to get rid of it. So we decided to use a biblical principle. We decided to cast lots on the deal. And but again, my wife, knowing the way I am at times, she said, "Now you have to be willing to do what you feel, what God says we're supposed to do. If you cast lots, you got to go by it." And so I said, "Oh, you mean there's no 2 out of 3 on this deal?" And she said, "No, it's one time and one time only." So we decided to do that, and not really knowing the principle of how they actually cast lots. I didn't know if it was like dice or stones or sticks or whatever, but we used the old put a piece of paper in a hat and draw, like drawing a name out of a hat like you do for Torah readings on Sabbath. So in that we put, then I was trying to think, well, if I sell the truck, I've got a trader. You know, a trader's no good without a truck, so I'm still trying to justify not getting rid of it because of that. So in the hat, we put a paper with just the truck. We put truck and trader, just trader. And I thought, yeah, I could still run a truck without a trader, or none. So I had a 25% chance of keeping my truck in this deal. Actually, I had a 0% because God was in control of it this time. So out of four pieces of paper in the hat, I reached in and grabbed one, and it was the truck, just alone, just the truck. So I looked at that, and I just kind of threw it in Brenda's lap. I still wasn't happy about the situation. And she says, I think at that point I did say, "Gee, do I get 2 out of 3? She says, "No." So I called the guy back in Mississippi, and I sold the truck, but still reluctant at the time, but just showing that, God tells you to do something, you better listen. And I said, we suffered a little bit because of it, and I know it financially as well as spiritually in that area. But I did learn something in that, though, because my whole focus in life at that time was business. I was raised that way. My dad was, I learned my dad's work ethic, and that was, your work comes first. And since then, I've learned that, work is not first in your life. I listened to a DVD series that Brent and I have purchased. It's on, we haven't had you look at it, have we? It's a DVD series on a seminar on marriage, which Brent and I for years have felt like we were supposed to do a ministry in helping people that are having trouble in their marriages. I heard a long time ago that if you are going into a ministry, a lot of times you'll be called into a ministry that you have knowledge in or experience in. And most of you know our story, that we had a lot of experience in our marriage the first 13 years before we came to Christ. But when we answered God's call, three weeks apart, thank God, that he changed my wife, and 3 weeks later he changed me. And between, was it May and November, he had done such a work in our marriage that we renewed our wedding vows and started our life over as Christians and husband and wife. But in that, he lists priorities in that doesn't matter what else is going on in your life, that God is number one in your life. His priority, then your wife, then your children, then your job. I believe that's how it went in that some order. But the key word was, or the key part of it, is that God is number one. Well, at that time in my life and throughout my life, that hasn't always been the case. You know, God was always, my work was always first. So, but God wanted, he wanted his rightful place in my life. And if it took taking me out of business, thank you for that, taking me out, as he did there, but taking me out in my business, then that's what he was going to do. But fortunately, we were blessed in the fact that he took me out of that business without, he could have took me all the way to the bottom and bankrupted me and, losing everything. But as it was, he was, again, graceful to me and my family. And I think the only reason he was graceful to me is because of my family. So, they shouldn't have to suffer for my stupidity. So we got rid of the truck, and in the last 2 years, he's been doing a lot of work on me, on listening and obeying, and I still have struggles in that. I don't always listen when I feel he's been telling me to obey, and so we still have some rocky moments here and there, and indecision, and but I wanted to do that one. I was going to read all of 1 Samuel 15, but I don't want to put everybody to sleep with just reading, so. But just another instance of how it was the story. About King Saul, when I'll start in verse 17. So Samuel said to Saul, "When you were little in your own eyes, were you not the head of the tribes of Israel? And did not the Lord anoint you king over Israel? Now the Lord sent you on a mission and said, 'Go and utterly destroy.'" Give me two. Pull one out and I get two. There's one in there. I'm not sure who that was. "Now the Lord sent you on a mission and said, 'Go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed.' Why then did you not obey the voice of the Lord? Why did you swoop down on the spoil and do evil in the sight of the Lord?" And Saul said to Samuel, "But I have obeyed the voice of the Lord and gone on the mission on which the Lord sent me, and brought back Agag, the king of Amalek. And I have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. But the people took of the plunder, the sheep, the oxen, the best of things which should have been utterly destroyed, to sacrifice to the Lord your God in Gilgal." So he's trying to pawn it off on the people that took it off. "So Samuel said to him, 'Has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than to sacrifice, and to heed then to the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft.'" I see, when I come across that right there, I thought, rebellion, disobeying is rebellion. And well, when that the word there, witchcraft, jumped out, it's like, wow. You know, God calls rebellion and disobedience as, you know, same thing as, you know, being involved in witchcraft. "And stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he also has rejected you from being king." And Saul said to Samuel, "I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord and your words, because I feared the people and I obeyed their voice." So now, you know, Saul had the kingdom in front of him. He had everything. He was one of the greatest leaders of all time, richest people ever. And just because that one thing, you know, God stripped him of his kingdom, basically. And like I said, you know, God doesn't always do that to us. You know, he's pretty merciful to us, but if we just, you know, if we just continue to disobey, you know, there's going to come a point where he's going to say, "All right, you know, I'm done with you. I wash my hands," like Pilate did to the people. "Yeah, well, I'm going to, he's going to wash his hands of us." I think this country's seen a lot of that too. You know, that this country used to be a Christian nation, now it's not, or they still claim to be, but they don't act like it. So I believe a lot of things that are going on, and I may have disagreements on that, but I believe it's because God's lifting his hand of protection off this nation, because they have turned their back on him. And, you know, it just felt like they're, you know, King Saul. He turned his back on God by allowing the people to do what God told him not to do. And he lost his kingdom. And I think King George facing the same issue now, as Johnny calls him, little King George. But, I said, fortunately we live in a time where God's very merciful, and sometimes I still wonder why, you know, this week. Continually screw up and mess up, and he still. But excuse me. And just another. Well, here, this more or less an example of what, you know, will happen if we do follow God in Genesis 26. And it's a song, or the talking about Abraham. It said that in 26, starting in 1, "There was a famine in the land besides the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines of Gerar." And I'm sorry, the story of Isaac. I've got to read my notes before I start speaking. "Then the Lord appeared to him and said, 'Go down, do not go down to Egypt. Live in the land which I shall tell you.'" That's a definite command from God to, you know, don't go where you want to go. Go where I want you to go. and dwell in this land, and I will be with you and bless you, for to you and your descendants I give all these lands, and I will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham your father. And I will make your descendants multiply as the stars of the heavens. I will give to your descendants all these lands, and in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. Because of what his father did. Because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. So Isaac received the promise because his father obeyed God. I'm reading that correctly. In another aspect of obedience is, which I found over the years too, is really a difficult thing to accomplish, is the things that go through your mind. But, we all know that the scripture verses say, profane language out of your mouth is not good. And even when Jesus modified the Ten Commandments to where they were no longer just, you had to actually do it, you just had to think about it. We all know that. So in reading those verses, that's a struggle I have. My wife can tell you that years ago, and occasionally it creeps out, that I used to be a very hot-headed person, had a quick fuse, and it's kind of smiling at me. And unfortunately, she's been a victim of that short fuse a time or two over the years, and I have asked forgiveness of that many times. More where I'm knees in my pants, on my knees begging forgiveness. But she's like, no, you didn't. Got to make it sound good. She knows that I don't do it on purpose, but sometimes I wonder. Anyway, that's just another example of being obedient to what the scriptures say, I try really hard, and sometimes I slip, and I know a lot of us out there do. It's that old the old man jumps out every now and then, and reminds us that we're human. But first, I wanted to read was 2 Corinthians in verse 10, or chapter 10. Okay, right. And verses 1 through 6. And this is what we really need to work on, especially in our thought processes and, the words that we speak. Kids used to have when we talk about movies or things like that, we'd ask, the question would get asked, well, if the Lord Jesus were sitting beside you on the couch watching this movie, would you be watching that movie? Or would you be at this show or this whatever? And a lot of times, unfortunately, I'd have to say no. So that really has to make you think about what you're watching and what you're thinking. Anyway, in chapter 10, it says, now I, Paul, myself am pleading with you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, who in present am lowly among you, but being absent am bold toward you. But I beg you that when I am present, I may not be bold with that confidence by which I intend to be bold against some, who think of us as if we walked according to the flesh. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds, casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ, and being ready to punish all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled. So even just the bringing our thoughts into captivity is being obedient to Christ. And I found a lot of areas in the scriptures that talked about obedience. I'm sure if a person wrote down every single one, it could be a very extensive time. So I tried to not do that. But for our family, we've struggled with obedience over the years. I know as kids, I was probably one of the most disobedient children in my family. I tell the story that my dad probably wore out two or three leather belts on my hind end because of my disobedience. And I'm sure at the time I didn't feel it was fair because I always got whippings and my brothers didn't. But there's another example of deliverance from a problem I had years ago. I used to be probably up until the age of about 14 or 15, was a professional liar. My mom said it used to scare the heck out of her because I could stare her straight in the eye, tell an out-and-out lie, and she could not tell it. She could tell anybody else anywhere that they were lying just by looking in their eyes when they told it. She said I could do it. She couldn't tell. It scared her. And I think back on that, it was a pretty scary thought. You know, you can get to that point where you can be so good at it. And probably I didn't even know at the time that it was. You know, I probably thought it was truth. And I've met some people over the years that have done that. You know, they tell a lie so often that they actually believe it's true. But, so, what's that going with that? being disobedient as a child. So I always thought it was unfair that I got whipped. But as I grew older and grew into manhood and got my own family and realized that I look back on it, my dad makes a comment that, you know, none of my boys had ever been in trouble and had never been in jail, so he figured, you know, we turned out all right. So I have gone to my dad's on several occasions and told him that, you know, when I was younger and I was getting whipped all the time and, you know, my brothers weren't and I didn't think it was fair, but I look back on it now and realize that every spanking I got, I deserved, and I even told him there was probably a few that I deserved that I never got caught at. So, but just being obedient to your parents is very important too, and something that I wanted to turn to Joshua and chapter 24 and read verses 14 and 15. It says, "Now therefore, fear the Lord, serve him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the river, and in Egypt serve the Lord. For if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river," which I believe is speaking of the Jordan, "or the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And that's an old verse that most of us have known most of our lives, and at least from the time we became a Christian anyway. Sometimes, you know, as a father and a husband and a provider, you know, that's one thing my wife's never complained about. I've always been a good provider, but at times it's come at the cost of time spent. You know, I've never been a driver that's been like a lot of the guys out there I know that are gone for months at a time. I always tried to stay as close to home as possible. And my wife tells me now after all these years that my maximum time out is 2 weeks now because I became a royal pain in the tooth when I'm gone longer than 2 weeks. And the oddest thing, you know, I think I told Carol the other day that I'd like to find the guy that made up the phrase, absence makes the heart grow fonder. I don't know where that came from, but I know it makes me long for my wife when I'm gone like that. I know she wishes I was there too, but for some odd reason, whenever I would come home after more than 2 weeks, we would fight the whole time I was home. And I'm thinking, why? And I know that was the enemy because the thoughts go through my mind, why did I bother coming home? All we do is fight. So it took me a while to figure that out. She helps remind me all the time, though. And I'm not going to go home. Don't embarrass my wife too much. Probably a good thing I am in the truck this week. So. My daughter laughs. Got myself all messed up. You know where I was? But you know, in that, you know, when you serve God in obedience and you put God in His proper place at the head, and you know. But I believe that it definitely has helped our family and our marriage, you know, to have him as the head of our household and just me as the provider and through all those years. And yeah, I always took the credit for it. And I think that's a lot of the reason why God knocked me down a notch or two. It's like, hey, you think you're so good? We'll see how you do. But even in that, he still blessed me with work. Yeah, I've never been without work. The only time I've ever been unemployed, thankfully to God, is when I wanted to be, when we needed to be somewhere. And I even thought about that on the way down here because I wanted to travel with my family and be here together. But this trip again, I don't know, I guess I screwed up in the beginning. I didn't go to God with it to ask Him His provision in it. And more of us kind of followed what I normally did and got right back in the same old mode of, I can get there. Well, we did get here, but unfortunately I wasn't able to get here till Saturday morning, and that really, really did bother me a little bit. And I don't like working on the Sabbath. And I just, I'm on my way, it's on the way, so it was, like I said, justified that it was okay. And so it didn't fare too well in the beginning. I think I even told Brianna at one point, I think Mom's kind of, I told my dispatcher, I said, my wife's already upset enough at me as it is, the way things are going, that I probably should just get there. But then again, looking at the provision side of it, thinking that I'm out here working my way there, so I might as well work my way there. And anyway, so we just, but to build that foundation, my dad instilled in me with the work ethic, and thankfully God instilled in me the his aspect of how a husband and father is supposed to be. And one thing about us is we have spent a lot of good times together on the road. We've done a lot of vacations on the road, and there was one, what year was that, 2 years ago when we ran? Well, speaking of God's provision, and it's about 2 years ago, we had, at the end of the year, we looked back on the year. We figured it out that whole 12-month period, that I had only worked actually 6 full months. And I had on my taxes that year, we had a gross income of $38,000. That was gross income. Trucking, roughly about a 75% expense margin. Yeah, about roughly, if you're stretching it, it's even less now than it was, but roughly only about 25% of your gross income will actually go in your pocket. And then you got to pay your bills at home. That's just, the truck bills. Well, we figured that out, $38,000, take out 75% and pay all the house bills. We're actually, on paper, we're in the red. Now thinking out, how in the world did we do this? 6 months on the road, 6 months not working, it was coming to the feast, that's the year that we did really well. Spiritual-wise, not monetarily, but spiritually we did, I guess, because we looked at the end of that, and it's like, how in the world did we actually survive that year? There was no tangible, physical reason why we should have been solvent at the end of that year. No way at all. And I've had people ask me, how in the world did you do that? Most people work 51 months out of the year just to survive, and I worked for 51 weeks, 51 weeks. They get maybe one week a year vacation, and that's usually the people I know go to the feast on that. They don't go have, they do go have fun. I'm sorry. I almost said they don't go have any fun. We never have any fun here, do we, Mark? So, I thought, there's no way possible we should have survived that year. But yet, God provided. He knew we had to be at the feast. We had to be at the spring holy days. I believe Pentecost we did spend at home. And then we traveled to the Feast of Tabernacles. And, even this year, some people are questioning our sanity for driving 2,000 miles with the price of gas the way it is to be here. But to me, and that's part of the reason why we worked our way here. And, but still, we were questioning, how can you guys afford it? Well, now it's probably 20 cents more a gallon now than when we got here. So it's, I remember one year when the price got up to, about $1.75 to $2, that Mark had posted on the internet that he didn't care if it was $10 a gallon, he still was going because God will provide. And a lot of people here made the comment about how expensive it was to get here, but I believe God's going to bless that in ways that we haven't even seen yet that are coming up. And who knows, this may be another year where I only work 6 months and maybe only make $20,000. Only problem is I've already exceeded that, so I can't say that. Or God has provided that. Look out, here come the lightning bolts. But anyway, I kind of got off there with that. I was going to read Luke 6, 46 through 49. Yeah, it says, "But why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do the things which I say?" That's the one that got me on that one. Why do I call him my Lord, but I don't do what he says? "Whoever comes to me and hears my sayings and does them, I will show you whom he is like. his like a man building a house, who dug deep and laid the foundation on the rock. And when the floods arose, the stream beat vehemently against that house and could not shake it, for it was founded on the rock. The rock they're talking there is on Christ. But he who heard and did nothing is like a man who built a house on the earth without a foundation, against which the stream beat vehemently, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great. And yeah, so there, immediately it fell. And fortunately, the Lord has been very sparing on us that, you know, that he didn't cause me to immediately fall. You know, he gave me several chances, and it's still in that he didn't make a call completely, because it fell, and the ruin of that house is great. Fortunately, our ruin wasn't as great as what I believe that was. So it's just shows just how much grace and mercy he does have toward us, you know, today. Try to read my own notes. But pretty good little timer. How far are we going? Take a second, look at this. Okay. Anyway, I'm going to skip a little bit. I don't know how long we're getting or how much more time I've got, but the another little short story that I shared with Carol, I pointed out that when we left Montana to move to, our intentions were to move to Arkansas. And it was kind of funny, we were making the plans to go down. Well, actually, we're in Arkansas. And Brent and I were on our way to Minnesota. I had plans to work for a company out of St. Cloud. They have a leasing outfit where you basically can lease the truck from them and become an owner-operator again. I figured that's the only way I was going to get back into it. So we went to Arkansas, and on our way up to Minnesota, Brenda asked me, well, when's the last time you talked to Mark? I said, well, it's been a while, so we were kind of curious how the school building was going. So I called Mark on the way up there, and he made the comment, well, you hadn't heard from me in a while. And I think he even alluded to the fact that I was kind of trying to hide from him or something. And I had to admit that in a way I was, because, you know, they wanted us to move back here after we left, and never wanted us to leave in the first place. So I said, well, you know, I was kind of dodging the issue for a while because I figured you might get upset, you know, at all the places I could go. Why didn't I come back here? And he said, no, he says, I wasn't really worried about it. He says, you'll only be there a couple, 3 years, you'll be gone anyway. Even if you came here, it'd be the same story. But I'd come here for a couple, 3 years and leave anyway. So he wasn't really holding any hope that I'd come back here. But so anyway, that was aside there, but as it turned out, the company up there could not guarantee me that they would be able to get me home on the Sabbath. They couldn't actually tell them, but they said, well, we can get you home on a regular basis, but it'll be the middle of the week, because our best days are loaded Fridays and Mondays, and if you're not working through the weekend, you're not going to survive. Little do they know. So anyway, it was Brenda went with me, and that's kind of an ironic story too, that she rode up with me. She was going to drop me off, leave Tuesday morning. It's the 5-day orientation they had up there. She was going to drop me off and leave and come back to Arkansas Monday morning, and I was just going to finish the week, get a truck, and start working. But for some odd reason, she felt the need to stay with me. That didn't sound right. She felt God's leading to stay with me instead of leaving. And see, the years before when I was trucking, it was my business. You know, Brenda didn't really seem to have an interest in being part of it. So anyway, when she expressed a desire to stick around and go through orientation, I thought, yeah, that's cool. So in that, though, she learned a lot about the trucking aspect that she had never knew before. You know, how to do the finances and how much, what it really costs to run a truck. She never really knew that. She knew that I ran the truck, I put money in the checking account, we paid the bills. That's all she really knew. Well, going up there, they taught a lengthy class on the financing aspect of running a business. And so she learned a lot up there, and she decided to stay the whole week. And then just, you know, whenever class was over, I got my truck, I'd go my way, she'd come back to Arkansas. Well, Wednesday morning of the third day of the orientation, I woke up feeling like that we were going to go home. that this was not going to work. And we were basically approached by one of the people there to have a meeting with them and want to know what we wanted to do, what we thought this was going to be. And so we explained to him about the Sabbath and the holy days and the time off I would need. And well, we went back to class, and after lunch they came and got us again, so they wanted to finish our conversation. We didn't get a chance to finish it. So it was the first meeting, just the one lady. As we walk into the meeting room where we had our meeting with her before, there's four people in there. There's this lady, her trainee, the instructor of the class, and one of the dispatchers. And I walked in and said, "Oh, this isn't a meeting, this is a firing squad." So they expressed their concern that what we needed or what we wanted would not work with their company. And I told them, "Well, that's kind of ironic because this morning I woke up feeling like I was going home today." And we explained to them, yeah, we talked about it, and no, it wouldn't work. You know, being out occasionally on the Sabbath, I didn't mind, but I would have to be somewhere where I could find another group that I could meet with. And you know, that sometimes is a struggle, but I've done it before, and I know other Sabbath keepers have had a struggle too. But so anyway, we went back to Arkansas, and I started checking out jobs. I ended up landing a local job hauling wood chips right there in Russellville. 5 days a week, home every weekend, off by before sundown on Friday. I went in the office, filled out the application. I went in the truck boss in the owner's office. They walked in. One guy looked at him, and he looked at the application. "What do you think?" He says, "Uh-huh." They hired me right there on the spot. I said, "Well, God's providing." Well, not quite. About 2 or 3 hours later, I get a phone call from the truck boss. Mikey says, "I'm really, really sorry to tell you this, but we can't hire you." I think, wait a minute, I've got 28 years experience. Now, what do you mean? Well, unfortunately, I have a tendency to get a heavy right foot. I had 4 violations on my record. Their insurance company would only allow 2. And so that was... So now I'm thinking, okay, now what do I do? Well, I answered an ad in the paper for a company out of Tennessee that had a dedicated haul out of Russellville. I'm not going to go on. Most of you know about that. Well, they didn't care. Well, they did care, but I was right at their borderline of how many violations their company would allow. So, let me choose. Sorry about that. Anyway, so we proceeded to attempt to find a place to live in Russellville or in the area. And so when we first went down, the only concern we really had with that area was the Arkansas 1 nuclear power plant, which is only about 5 miles from town. And that was a big concern, but we thought, well, they say if you stay within about or outside of a 100-mile radius of the nuclear plant, even if it does have a leak or a blow up or whatever, that you'd be pretty safe. So we made a circle how far out 100 miles was, and we started looking at it, and we found properties really cheap compared to Montana. We're looking at houses and land for $25,000, $30,000, and hey, we can do good there. We found out that those cheap houses were, yeah, they were there. A lot of them were. Some of them were single-wide mobile homes with the roofs caving in. But the majority of the ones we found outside the 100-mile radius were on roads. It's 100 air miles out, which means maybe about 60 miles on the ground. Well, that 60 miles could take you 2.5 to 3 hours to drive it because of the roads. So we thought, well, that's not going to work because we wanted to be a part of the church. Well, if you're 3 hours out, you can't drive in 4 or 5 times a week to do church functions. So we ended up, the church was gracious to us. They allowed us to live in the church for 3 months. They have facilities set up with showers, and oh, Herb and Carol stayed there with us. They know what it is. And so we were there for 3 months, and we were trying to buy, and everything that we tried to do seemed to fall through. We had a 3-acre piece we were looking at. Brenda loved it. She wanted the tree that was out back. It had an oak tree that had a big limb that came straight out and then curved up. She said, "A swing." She loved that tree. And I almost asked him, "Can I just buy the tree?" And it was next to a 12.5-acre piece, and I wanted to buy all of it, but it was too much. And then we looked into putting a mobile in. Well, the price of things down there, it started to get to a point where the mobile home on the land was exceeding the price ranges of the houses that were already there. And so we thought, well, that's not going to work. We don't want to overdo it. So we ended up turning down the mobile home, and we're going to buy the land and just eventually build something on it. And had an offer from a friend of mine here in Tennessee that he would come over and help me build a house when I got ready. So anyway, we thought, okay, we'll just buy the land. So I was off on a run, and my realtor called me and says, Mike, we got a problem with the property. I said, now what? Well, it turns out the 3-acre piece we're looking at was right beside the 12 and a half acres, and the road dead ended at the gate going into the 12 acres. So I said, well, there's a problem. There's no actual easement into that 12 acres, and the owner wants to keep back 30 feet of this property, and he'll sell it for less, $1,500 less. But they said they need that for an easement into the property. So that's okay. I'll come in when I get home tomorrow, and I'll look and see what the deal is. So as I look at this easement, the easement, I thought, went up the side of the property between the two, but actually it went in front of, from the road in 30 feet, from the property line on this side to the property line on this side. And I looked at that property, I told my realtor, I said, Suzanne, I said, if he doesn't sell me that 30 feet in the front, how do I get into it? Because it basically cut me off. She looked at us and says, you know, you're right. This won't work. She says, well, let me, and I, about that time, I just got fed up with it. And she said, well, let me go get the other agent. I said, no, wait a minute, just forget it. Tell them we're backing out. I said, this is our counteroffer. We don't want it. So it seemed like everything we tried to do there fell apart. And one evening, the church over there puts on tent crusade meetings throughout the year. And they had one in Clarksville, and I was home for one of the nights, and I went over, and one of the ladies there, a very sweet older lady, her name is Elva. Everybody calls her Granny. Beautiful lady. I love her to death. And she cried when we left. That made it hard. But as I walked past her that night, she grabbed me by the hand as I walked by and kind of lowered her head down, and she kind of turned to the side and says, Mike, she says, God wants to tell you to not be discouraged, don't get depressed. And then she kind of got a puzzled look, and she said, and don't get attached. And I thought, okay, what's this all about? This is our room here. And so I had Brenda come. I said, Brenda, come here. Granny, tell her what you just said to me. And she told her the same thing. Well, I can understand the depressed and discouraged part. I was getting really discouraged about this whole deal. You know, nothing was working. Everything that I planned I was going to do was falling through. So after a while, I started feeling the need to go back to Montana. And was not met with very good results from my family, because my wife proceeded to remind me that all the things that we were leaving behind in Montana that were part of our problem of being there was still there. Nothing's different. I'm like, well, I just don't understand it, but I'm really feeling drawn there. So this went on for quite some time, and I kept bringing it up, and she would still remind me of the situation there. So anyway, one day we decided to pray and fast about it, see what God had to say about it. And so she asked me, what day did I choose? And I said, well, let's do it on Friday, right before Sabbath. So we had the praise and prayer service Friday night, and we had the Sabbath service on Saturday. And that'd be a good time, because when we go to praise and prayer service, you really can get in tune with God there. So we fasted and prayed that Friday, went to the meeting, and at one point in the music part of it, I was praying, you know, God, what do you want me to do? You know, this deal with Montana, and all I heard was, go home. I think, okay, does he mean get up and go home? What does he mean? And then I felt like he said, go home again. And I said, okay, God, where is home? You know, is it the home here? I said, first 32 years of my life, it was California. The last, since 1992, has been Montana, Tennessee, Arkansas, Oregon. Where exactly is home? And you know, Brendan and I have been praying about that for a long time. You know, where is home for us? You know, we've been so many places over the years. You know, we thought home was here, and then God called us back to Montana. We thought Arkansas was home, back to Montana. So it was all pointing back that way. So my next request from God was, okay, where is home? And this particular song came on that I'd heard before, that I really loved the song. But in the verse, it says, "What it's not what you can do for me, but what can I do for you, Lord?" Beautiful song. I wish I had it. We could play it. But anyway, when that song was playing, all I heard was the word Montana. I'm thinking, oh, great. Wife doesn't want to go, family doesn't want to go, but this is what I'm hearing. So we left the service. I was kind of quiet going home, and we got the house, and the kids had gone to bed, and Brenda and I were in the living room. She was laying on the couch, and I was leaning up against her, and she asked me the question, did you hear anything? Well, I'm not one to really... I believe in hearing from God, I do. And I believe it even more now so than I did before, but I never was able to distinguish between what I thought was God speaking to me or just me thinking about something. So when I think I hear something, I don't know if it's just my thought process or whether it's God really speaking to me. So I never really knew. So I told her, she asked me, did you hear anything? I said, well, I think so, but I'm not sure. She says, well, what'd you hear? I said, well, I don't know. I don't know if I heard anything. So finally she asked me, she says, well, why are you afraid to tell me? I thought, well, I'm not really afraid to tell you. I just want to be sure what I'm hearing is from God. She says, what did you hear? So I told her, I said, well, I told us to home to Montana. And she said, that's exactly what I heard. And I looked at her and I went, whoa. And then she asked, I said, well, when did you hear that? At what point of the service did you hear it? And I said, well, it was during that song, What Can I Do For You, Lord? And she looked at me and says, that's exactly the same moment that God told her the same thing. I said, well, I guess that's confirmation. So, you know. So we started telling everybody that at the church that we were planning on going back to Montana. And people would ask me, and I'd tell them, well, we heard from God and we're going back home. Well, then God started speaking to me again. He says, okay, I told you to go home. Why aren't you? Didn't have an answer. Well, actually, I did. I went down the road of, well, you know, it would be a lot more... make more sense if we waited till spring feast, go to Tennessee, and then go home. So it was, what, 3 weeks? 3 weeks before feast that this all came about. And my thought was, well, we'll just wait till we leave to go to Tennessee, and then we'll just make a big loop and go home. And every time I would tell someone that, yeah, we're going home. Why not? Or why aren't you? Yeah, we're going home. Why aren't you? That's all I kept hearing, so... We went to, I can't remember if it was praise service or Bible study, but we were at the church one night going home, and I was kind of in a down mood. Brenda looked over at me and said, well, what's wrong? You know, so I've just been dealing with something or, you know, battling something. So, well, what is it? And I said, well, it's starting to bother me that every time that I tell somebody we're going home, I keep hearing in the back of my mind, why aren't you? And I'm getting to the point where I can't really answer that question. I don't know why I'm not. I said, yeah, but we're going to go do this. You know, we're going to go over there first, then we'll go home. Because if we go home now, we'll be going to Montana, to Tennessee, back to Montana. Well, she had it figured out that money-wise, by not paying the rent for the month that we were going to still be there, that it wouldn't cost any more to make the trip up, down, and back. So by then, 3 weeks had gone by, so now we paid the rent, so that kind of threw that out the window. So, and I'm still trying to justify it as well. It'll cost more if we do that. And we'll be home for like 4 days when we turn on going back, you know, and I don't want you guys to have to drive that much. So, anyway, I tell her this, and she says, well, why aren't we? So I justified it. She says, no, well, if you feel that God's telling you that we need to go home, we need to go home now. So, it's all right, start packing, and I'll get my guys to find me a load going home. And I told Carol the story of that, too, that my guys found me loads that took me home, paid very well. And so, I told you I've been here twice. But, no problem? Okay. I don't know how many, I guess I'm done. I can't speak anymore. I don't know how many have heard that story since we've been here. I tried not to tell it so you wouldn't have to hear it twice, or three times, or four times. But, but anyway, I think I've gone on long enough. But I did want to read one last scripture before I finish, but, those ones I have a hard time finding, so I had to actually write down the page number where it was. It's on page 1675, for those of you who are... <It's> actually... That's one thing that Pastor Lassiter would do at the church over there if people weren't fine. He says, oh, it's on page 600. There you go. It's not there. I don't always like telling stories, I guess, but I have to tell you one that I have told a few of you, that when I got to the feast over in Arkansas last year, that a lot of the guys in the church and some of the ladies in the church in Russellville are avid deer hunters, but out of all the members of the church that deer hunt, they've killed two. The whole time. Since they've all been there, that's all they've ever got was two. Not two last year, but two, period. And one of them was shot by a lady, Tabitha, who all the guys were out beating the brush. They parked over here, well, we'll put her over here where it's safe, and she doesn't have to walk very far. She killed the only deer. Oh, and all these guys, they're going out there smelling. They didn't take baths, you know, because you don't want the deer to smell deodorant. They'll smell it a mile away. She's out there, got perfume on, makeup on. They're thinking, she'll never even see a deer. She's the only one that got one. So, it was neat. And she's a little, she's a beautiful lady. I love her. But anyway, from the pulpit, Larry starts talking about, we got on the subject of deer hunting, and they say, down here we have to hunt for our deer. Now, Mike up there, he harvests deer. I told him last year, or the last year I hunted before with Arkansas, that I put six deer in the freezer and fired two shots. He looked at me like, how in the world did you do that? So, I just waited till they kind of lined up, you know, and shot through one and got the other two. And, a very good friend of mine there, an acquaintance. he's a good kid. I worked with him at the tire store for a while, and he's an avid bow hunter. He's single, so he loves to go hunting and kill deer, but he can't use them also. He actually brought me three, which was a blessing, really a blessing. And then one of the other guys I work with, his son killed one, and they didn't have time to process it, so he gave me that. So that, I did shoot two, though, in two shots. Still got them in two, but that was all. So we were really blessed that year. But Larry tells the story, that, down here in the South, but we count all the points on a deer, so, we have an 8-point. Well, up where Mike comes from, he said, that's a 4-point. They only count one side up there. So he says, and here's why. So he goes, all right, that's a nice buck. Okay, it's a 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, crud. 1, 2, 3, 4. Darn it. 1, 2. We can never remember from one side to the other, wasn't it? That's not really true, but it sounded good. Got a good laugh at my expense. I'd like to finally close this with Colossians 3. It's not a long one, so I'm going to read the whole chapter. Colossians 3, starting verse 1. If then you were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. For you died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, appears, then you also will appear with him in his glory. Therefore put to death your members which are on the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience, in which you yourselves once walked when you lived in them. But now you yourselves are to put off all these, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you have put off the old man with his deeds, and have put on the new man, who is renewed in the knowledge according to the image of him who created him. For there is neither Greek nor Jew, circumcised nor uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave nor free, but Christ is all and in all. Therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another, and forgiving one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so you also must do. But above all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection, and let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which also you were called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. And whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. Wives, I forgot this was in here. Wives, submit to your own husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be bitter toward them. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. Bondservants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing God. And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of your inheritance, for you serve the Lord Jesus Christ. But he who does wrong will be repaid for what he has done, and there is no partiality.